One of the refrains there is, "Our God is mighty to save." And I thought very appropriate because sports camp, we're a week removed, but I just, what we as a church family, but Pam, the big boss lady, second class colonel, but all the volunteers, thank you, and just the generosity for the young kids, the salvation. Scott's going to just bless us with what God did and share what went on at the camp. But thank you to all. Thank you especially to Pam and Scott. Scott, come share what went on.
Well, Linda, can you hear that?
Yeah.
Okay, it fell off earlier and I had to put it back up. But yeah, thanks, Georgia. That was perfect. I think we could probably just, our God's mighty to save, and call that a deal and go eat lunch or something. But I learned a long time ago never to let my rank be confused with Pam's authority. sports camp was a fantastic time. We put some of the statistics out on the board. Just to let you know, there were 84 kids registered. One family of five ended up having to spend the entire time in Texas. So we averaged around 74, 75 kids at camp every day. Of those, 32 of them were new kids who'd never been here. 16 new families represented in those 32 kids, of whom seven didn't register any kind of church home. So that's the kind of community you guys are reaching into. 22 of those kids didn't have any church home listed on their registration, which again is just reaching out to the community. That's, you know, almost a third of those kids. And out of that, 11 professed the desire to follow Christ by the end of that. So "Our God is Mighty to Save" is a great song for that. Three of those 11 kids didn't have any church home listed. So, those are kids to pray for. And we have 8 of the 12-year-olds all desire to come back and be junior coaches next year. So we're really excited about that. That's kind of cool. And I guess there's a lot of other people wearing shirts like this around. If you helped in sports camp at all, would you just stand up and let us all recognize you? Because it was just a great time. Go ahead, just stand up, okay? Let everybody just see. There's a whole time, yeah. Linda didn't stand up in the back, but, Dieter mentioned Pam and I, but Darlene O'Brien, Karen Van Cleve, Georgia, Dieter, Pixie Riley and Mike Riley, Kate Sarr, Jim and Trudy Buck, Debbie Burr, Gary, Laura, and Paul Misak, Tony and Sherry Shelton, and Sherry's sister got even into the act. Marilyn Reed and Sue Reeves do an unspoken, unseen job making lunches for the coaches, which I'm telling you, they appreciate it a lot. And then Linda Lewis puts together our webpage and makes it possible to really figure out who's there and what kind of impact you guys are having on the community. So I appreciate all of them and their help. And I hate doing that because I probably missed somebody, and if I missed you, I'm really sorry. Let's see, I think I can push this button. There's more technology up here than in an A10 cockpit, so. Right there.
Colonels are used to saying
next slide. Wait. Yeah. Exactly. There we go. All right. So, good thing I can read that, huh? Anyway, the theme was Beyond the Gold, and the idea is kind of characterized in Eric Heiden and some statements that he made. He was a speed skater in the 1980 Olympics, kind of overshadowed by the Olympic hockey team that year. And also overshadowed by the fact that in 1976 he didn't win anything. But in 1980, he won 5 gold medals, setting world records in each one of the events he skated in. He's now a very successful orthopedic surgeon, also is the surgeon for the Olympic ice skating team. But some things he said was, "If I wanted to be famous, I would have stuck with hockey. heck, gold medals, what can you do with them? I'd rather have a nice warm-up suit. That's something I can use. Gold medals just sit there. In fact, they have to pay taxes on them now. When I get old, maybe I could sell them if I need the money." And then that sort of epitomizes a quote that John Candy said, attributed to Howard Seiler, who was a U.S. Olympic bobsledder who never won anything, but earned his fame as being the coach for the Jamaican bobsledding team, pictured in Cool Runnings. And what he said was, a gold medal is a wonderful thing, but if you're not enough without one, you'll never be enough with one. Which really, I think, sums up the whole theme of sports camp this year. And Dieter talked about 1 Corinthians 9, 24 and 25, if you read that. The key there is run. It's not win, it's not get there, it's run. It's a process. You know, we're supposed to run this race in such a way, and not a way to get a crown that fades or that deteriorates, but one that lasts forever, okay? And that's where we wanted to talk to the kids about, was it's not the idea of you have to win everything. You have to run the race and go through the process. So the first day, we talked about teamwork. You know, that's the foundation of success on a good team. Everyone knows their role, and the people we had working in teamwork, I'll tell you what, I mean, in sports camp, Pam and I just kind of step back and let it all happen, because we go back and say, hey, are the snacks ready? And they're all sitting there talking because, yeah, they're ready, just ready to roll them out. And it's just, you know, when lunchtime shows up, Marilyn and Sue are there with the snacks, and we don't have to do anything. It's kind of fun. We get to play with the kids. And God knows exactly what role you're supposed to play. And I'm not going to read all Nehemiah 1 through 6. But just a few things about it was that Nehemiah knew the game he was about, and he was prepared through prayer because he had paid attention to what was going on. In Nehemiah 1, 3, and 4, it says, "And they said to me, 'The survivors who are left from the captivity in the province are there in great distress and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates are burned with fire.'" So he knew what was going on. "And so it was when I heard these words, then I sat down and wept and mourned for many days. I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. 'O Lord, I pray, please let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and the prayer of your servants who desire to fear your name. And let your servant prosper this day, I pray, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, being the king, for I was the king's cupbearer.'" So he had a role. He was not much in the kingdom, but he saw where God needed to use him in Jerusalem. And he organized things. He found his teammates, and he got it all together. Even though he was a lowly cupbearer, he was ready to play. And he motivated his team, including the daughters. In Nehemiah 2, 17 and 18, it says, chapter 4, verse 1, it says, "But it so happened when Sanballat heard that we were building the wall, that he was furious and very indignant." Is that clicking something I'm doing, or no? Okay. Just wanted to make sure. "And mocked the Jews, and he spoke before his brethren in the army of Samaria, and he said, 'What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they fortify themselves? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they complete it in a day? Will they revive the stones from the heaps of rubbish, stones that are burned?" But then it goes on in chapter 6 of Nehemiah. He says, we learn that the wall was completed on the 25th day of Elul in 52 days. "And it happened when all our enemies heard of it and all the nations around us saw these things that they were very disheartened in their own eyes. For they perceived not that this was the work that, for th- they perceived that this work was done by God." So in 52 days, they finished the walls. They still had the gates to put up, but they got the walls done. So that's the teamwork idea in the Bible. And the sports example that the kids got to talk about was Klay Thompson. I don't know if you follow basketball. I don't, but he was a guard for the Golden State Warriors. One night, he had a really hot night, and he was just sinking threes from everywhere. All he had to do was look at the basket, toss it up, in. So his teammates figured that out, and they started tossing him the ball. And wherever he was, he'd plop it up, and it went in. That night, by I think the third period, in the third period with 4:53 left in the third period, he had 14 threes, setting an NBA record. He still had the fourth period to play, and he only dribbled 5 times in that entire time, because his teammates were pumping the ball to him. It's also kind of interesting that at that point in the game, the Chicago Bulls were behind 113-69. So the Golden State Warriors have scored 113 points in those three and a half or two and a half quarters. So that was kind of the teammate idea. The teammates know the roles. And I just got to share a little story here. I didn't see Darlene, so I didn't give her permission to ask to tell this story, but I'm going to tell it anyway because she deserves it. Darlene came to us about 3 weeks ago and said, I can't play with the kids. I can't run around with them. But in there some way I can help in sports camp? And said, sure, show up on Monday morning at 8:30 and we'll have a job for you. Well, Darlene helped with name tags. She handed out T-shirts. She grandmaed with little Colton, who was having a rough couple of days. And you know what? Darlene left every day with a huge smile on her face. And it's just a great example of, hey, what's my part on the team? And, you know, I see people here on this church that are ready to step in and take their role and run with it. And that's one of the great things about this church. So thank you all for that. And the second part of that, if you're on a team, you got to persevere. And the whole idea of that is to finish what you start. Imagine the end result and remember that God's always there, even when circumstances change and are tough. Noah was the biblical example that we looked at. You know, in Genesis 5:32, says that Noah was 500 years old and he begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And then you go into chapter 6, and in chapter 6 is where we learn about the sin and the desperation of man and all that. And then Noah's assigned to build the boat. Well, somewhere in that 100, 120 years, Noah builds a boat. Now, he might have done it in 2 or 3 days and left it in his driveway, or it might have taken him 120 years. We don't know, you know, what the neighbors were saying about all that. But he built a big boat. I mean, it was 25 yards by 150 yards, you know, essentially half as wide as a football field and half, again, as long as a football field. Dieter, they say that that's 1-to-6 ratio is the most stable ocean-going ship.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for the authority there. And some, it displaced something like 22,000 tons. That's a big boat. And Noah had never seen a boat that long. In fact, another boat that long or that big wasn't built until about the 1800s, according to BibleStudy.org or something like that. It's authoritative right there. But Noah hadn't seen it. He persevered even through something he hadn't seen to get to an end that he didn't even know about. And in Hebrews 11:7, it says, by faith Noah, being divinely warned of the things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. And the kid's sports story that day was about the North Carolina State's basketball team. They started a tradition under Coach Everett of cutting down the basketball hoops after they won a championship game. And you see that now all over, that they're the ones who started it. When Jimmy Valvano took over, he took his teams, and one practice at the beginning of each year, they had no balls, no running, no basketball at all. They got out ladders, gold scissors, and new nets on the hoops, and they practiced cutting down the net and cutting up a piece for everybody on the team. Because he wanted them to see the end before the beginning started. So they had cut down the nets before the season even started so that they would understand how good that felt. Well, in 1983, North Carolina State was not a very good team. They had lost 10 games already going into the postseason. They'd lost to Virginia twice getting into the postseason, but they made it into the big dance, into the NCAA tournament. So now they're playing through the tournament, and they've got to beat Virginia again to get into the finals. And they did. They had seen the thing. They hadn't beat Virginia all year, but they beat them getting into the finals. The real story is in the finals, in the last 4 seconds, Houston and North Carolina State were tied 52-52, and there's 4 seconds left. One of the North Carolina State players, Derek Wittenberg, is out at the three-point line. Got the ball 4 seconds, he tosses it up wildly, and it doesn't go anywhere near the net. But his teammate, Lorenzo Charles, saw the ball come and got into position, grabbed the rebound, and dunked it in for 2 points at the buzzer, so they won. So they saw the end from the beginning and put that championship together, even though they weren't the best team on the court. And Jimmy Valvano, the coach, credited his teams being able to see that end with being able to win that, that championship. And so that kind of vision, you know, generates respect among teammates, and that was the third day's theme was respect. And this is kind of, it's Jesus, okay? So that's always a good story. But the Bible verses were Mark 10, 35 to 45. And the two ideas are that you respect each other whether you're first or last, and God treats everyone with respect. Now this is Mark 10, 35 to 45. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him saying, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask." And he said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" They said to him, "Grant us that we may sit, one on your right hand and the other on your left in your glory." But Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" And they said to him, "We are able." So Jesus said to them, you will indeed drink the cup that I drink, and with the baptism I am baptized, that you will be baptized. But to sit on my right hand and on my left hand is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it is prepared. And when the ten heard it, they began to be greatly displeased with James and John. But Jesus called them to himself and said to them, "You know that those who are considered rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and the great ones exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you. But whosoever desires to become great among you shall be your servant, and whoever of you desires to be first shall be a slave, be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." And yeah, that was the theme of my command speech, actually, when I took command, was that I'm not here for you guys to work for me. I'm here to work for you so you can get your job done, and that's my job. And the sports story was really cool. Jalen Hurts was a quarterback for Alabama. He'd been the quarterback in his freshman and sophomore years, and they had won 26 out of 28 games those 2 years and a national championship. That's pretty recent, because in 2018 they were playing for another championship. But in that game, let me see if I get this right, make sure. Yep, Jalen wasn't playing well in the 2018 championship, so Nick Saban pulled him out and put in his teammate Tua Tagovailoa. I never did learn how to say that name. Anyway, took him out, put him in because Jalen wasn't playing well. Turns out Tua took the team and in a third down, 26-yard pass, scored a touchdown that put them in the lead, and they won the game. And Tua kept that starting position for the next season. So that may have been the season before 2018. Anyway, so Tua is now the starting quarterback. But Jalen, in the post-game interviews, after he was taken out of the game, had nothing but great things to say about his teammates and Tua and the fact that they won the championship and pulled it off without him. So now Tua is leading the team through the next year, and they come up to the SEC championship game against Georgia. So it's at Bama playing Georgia, and Tua is not playing well. In fact, he gets hurt right before halftime, and Jalen goes back into the game. They're down a touchdown. Tua goes into the game. Tua comes out. Jalen went in, threw for 84 yards and a touchdown, ran for another 28 yards and a touchdown, and they end up beating Clemson 35-28 in the SEC championship, and he earned his starting role back. But when they came back to the sideline, Tua and Jalen met in congratulatory hugs with each other because they respected each other and were such good teammates. I think that's another thing we do well. I mean, just the way you guys respect each other and greet each other is just heartwarming, and it's something that we always have to spend a constant effort at. And it always requires sacrifice, which is the third or fourth day's theme. And the fourth day is the day we do kind of an evangelistic bent on the day. The kids use an evangel cube to present the gospel to all the kids. Not that they aren't doing it through the other days, but Thursday is kind of geared toward that. And the theme is that, sacrifice always costs somebody something. And God's ultimate sacrifice, obviously, was of himself for us. Philippians 2, 5 to 11 is the verse there. Let this mind be in you, which is also in Jesus Christ, who being in the form of God, did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a servant and coming in the likeness of men, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. Therefore God also has highly exalted him and given him the name which is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, of those in heaven, of those on earth, and of those under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus is Lord to the glory of God the Father. The sports story about sacrifice was an interesting story. A young lady named Tammy Alotta, she's a senior now, I think, at Stanford University playing volleyball, but her parents left their home in Nigeria when she was young, probably 9, to come to Canada. They were going to study law and make a better life for the kids. When they got to Canada, obviously from Nigeria, that's a whole different world, they found out that life as an immigrant is hard. It required a lot of sacrifice on the parents' part, on the family's part, and they wanted to give up and go home. But they realized the sacrifice they were making was for the kids, so they stayed in Canada and gave up everything they had known to become Canadians. And Tammy herself loved soccer. She was a great soccer player. She's played volleyball her senior year in high school and came home with a full ride scholarship to Stanford. Turns out when she got to Stanford, they won a national championship with her on that volleyball team. And she said that she realized that being a part of a volleyball team made her feel more a part of a team than any sport she'd ever played. And that whole story started with her parents willing to sacrifice. So that's the story of the kids. And I got to tell you that, if I can say this, but your grandkids really spoke from their hearts, yours and our grandkids, about sacrifice. And if you haven't talked to them about what they said, you should, because there were some touching stories that they said. If you want to ask me, you can ask me later, but I'm not going to talk about it now because I won't get through this if I do. So that's sacrifice. And this one is an interesting one because the fifth day was about strategy. So a good strategy doesn't always make sense at first. And I think about that a lot when I think about the Bible, because you look at God's strategy for winning Jericho. Sorry, marching around the city every day and then the last day marching around it 7 times and blowing trumpets doesn't sound like a good military strategy to me. And neither did the story that we talked about, which is in Exodus 17, where Moses has just finished hitting the rock at the Rephidim, and they got the water out of the rock at Meribah. And then the Amalekites come up to push the uppity Jewish people out of the territory. And so Moses sends Joshua down to the battle. And in Exodos 17, 8 through 13, he says, "And now Amalek came and fought with Israel, Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, 'Choose us some men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand.' So Joshua did as Moses said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And so it was when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. And he went down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands became heavy, and one of the things the kids do is hold their hands out while the kids were talking about this story to find out how hard it is to hold your hand up that long. Yeah. His hands became heavy, so they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on one side and the other on the other side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. So Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword." Kind of a chaotic battle plan, right? Take a few guys, go. You didn't tell them how many to take. You didn't tell them. They didn't do any intelligence analysis on what the enemy was like. They just grabbed a few guys and went out and fought. And when he held his hands up, they won. The sports story was about the Croatian soccer team in the 2018 World Cup. But to talk about that story, you have to go back to the early 90s and realize that those kids had grown up in the Yugoslavian Civil War in Croatia, where, you know, I tried to explain, the coaches hadn't really grown up in that time frame either. So we were talking about what it was like for your neighbor to now become your enemy right next door, and you didn't know who was who and which was who was going to turn on you, and how, you know, big brothers would just disappear in the night. The kids didn't understand that. The coaches didn't understand that. So I talked with them about that for a while. But that was the environment that this Croatian soccer team had grown up with. It was a pretty chaotic environment. And things that they had learned during that time frame was that they became masters of survival, improvising, and passionately protecting what was theirs. So that was kind of their experience growing up, and the coach capitalized on those characteristics of the kids. And so their strategy became chaos and passion, never give up. So they showed up their first time. This team got together, got on the airplane, flew to their first game, and this was a must-win game to get them into the World Cup. They'd never played together. And the coach just said, go out there with passion and play. And it was chaos and passion. And they won. So they get into the World Cup. They're playing their way through the cycles and into the group of eight and group of four, and they have to beat the home team, Russia, to get into the finals. That's a pretty tall order for these young kids, because if you think about it, Croatia is about the size of Denver, you know, so that many people against the country of Russia. The kids put together a scrappy game, and they ended up tied at the end of regulation. So they went into a shootout. You have to understand soccer, I guess, a little bit. In a shootout, the team that goes first wins 60% of the time. So if you get the chance, you really want to shoot first, because the idea is it puts pressure on the other team. Well, the Croatians won the coin toss to figure out who shoots first, and their coach chose to go second. I think, what kind of strategy is that? Well, he knew his kids. He knew that they could respond with a casual atmosphere under the pressure, and he knew he had the best goalkeeper in the tournament. So choosing to go second was a great strategy for him. And so how does that end? I'd love to show you, but let me just explain it to you. The as they went up, Russia shooting first, the Croatian keeper blocks the first goal. And then the Croatian kid gets up and puts it in with no problem. So now the Croatians are up by one. But in the next two pair, the Russian kid kicks it in, and the Croatian kid gets his blocked. So now it's 1-1 after two. And the next pair both made it, so now it's 2-3. The Croatians are still up, and the pressure's on this last Russian. So the Russian steps up, and he puts his shot into the goal. So now it's 3-3 with the last Croatian up to shoot. His name is Rakitic. And so he's about to shoot, and he runs up, casually just plops the ball into the left side of the net, and the keeper guessed wrong and went the other way. And it was as simple as that, and they won by a score of 4-3. The rest of that story is they went on to lose to the French in that World Cup, but they went home as victors and winners because the country saw the victory that the kids had gone through to get into the finals. And there's still a great sports story. So strategy isn't always what you think it is. It's what God thinks it is, and it's important for us to understand what his end is. And that's kind of where we are with sports camp. We kind of know what the end is, but putting all the pieces together as we get into it is sometimes a bit chaotic, huh? So just as the Croatian team relished their win against the Russian, you know, they each knew their roles, and God knows his role for you, you know. He's always there, and you know your role. The idea is that when we know that role, we got to persevere in everything we do, imagining his desired end and result. And with that end in mind, you know, strive as Jesus did, not to be served, but to serve. And it's humbling for me to watch you guys and the personal sacrifices that happen all the time. I mean, just watching everything that goes on here is just really humbling. And just remember that whatever strategy God has in mind for you, it always includes His help and His plan. And remember that it's a process, not something that happens because we're doing it right. We're not always going to see that gold crown, but we're going to run in a way to get that gold crown, at least on earth. And then when we get to heaven, it'll be there because that's the crown that lasts forever. So 11 campers expressed their desire to follow Christ, and that's the beginning of the great race. And you all, through your donations and the time and energy you spent working in whatever way you did with camp, helped make that happen. So if you'd like to know more about that race, deacons will be up front here, ready to go. And just, again, thank you, all of you who helped, whether it was the prayer that we didn't ever see or cooking hot dogs on the last day. You know, you all had a part to play, and we appreciate it very much. So, Dieter, you want to come close the service?
Man, thank you. Thank you, Scott. Great program for the kids, just in the things they're learning. So thank you. Thank you to everyone. Let's pray, and then we will have our response song. Lord, thank you that through your ultimate resources, we are able to share that good news. And I thank you for this church family. I thank you for the kids, the families that sacrificed to drive up here, and just for a great week of camp. For the kids to hear these messages. We pray for Uncharted Waters, the ministry of Tim and Carol, and just what they are doing literally around the world, bringing the life-saving knowledge of that ultimate sacrifice, Jesus Christ. May He get all the glory. And in His precious name we pray. Amen.